Reading in verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, My lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. The tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king. Thou art great and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reached unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And whereas the king saw a watcher and an holy one coming down from heaven and saying, Hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump and the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field till 7 times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump and the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O king Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken. The kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and 7 times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, nor say unto them, What doest thou? At the same time my reasoning returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, and mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the kingdom of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. I'm planning on speaking on trials this morning. And this may seem like an interesting place to start, but I have a purpose in this. Most people, when they're in a trial, they like to turn to Job, and they see Job, and they put themselves... Job's trial is the worst of all trials that you could imagine. And so everybody can relate to it that's been in any sort of a trial. And we always turn to Job. We put ourselves in that situation because here, Job was a man, a righteous man. And God put them through this awful time to make him even better. And we all look at that and we like to console ourselves. And just think, you know, what God might be doing to make us even better. But there's 3 different types of trials. I'm going to look at all 3 of these this morning, but majorly I'm just going to talk about them in general. A lot of trials the people are in, they simply bring upon themselves. Why is it that when we're in a trial, why do we turn and look at Job and the trial he went through. Why don't we look to Nebuchadnezzar? Why don't we compare ourselves to him? Well, that wouldn't make us feel so good. Now, because he brought this upon himself. Why don't we turn to Saul when he had no army? Saul said, "Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings." And he offered a burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." Why don't we think of Saul when his army was leaving him? And think of the trial that he was going through at this time when he did these things. Well, because he wasn't a righteous man, and we would never stop to think that maybe we brought our problems upon ourselves. That would be awful. Why is it that when we're sick, why don't we think of Gehazi when he became a leper? When Naaman came to Elisha, and Elisha told him to go dip in the Jordan River 7 times, and he says, "Jordan, aren't there much better rivers than Damascus?" He's just about to go home, and his servant say to him, "Lord, if he had told you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it?" And he says, yeah, you're right. So he goes and he dips in the Jordan River 7 times, and he comes out healed. He goes back to Elisha, and he tries to pay Elisha, and Elisha turns him down and says no. So he goes to leaving, and Gehazi's mind starts turning, and he starts thinking, you know, I could run out there and I could get this for myself. So he does. He runs out and tells Naaman that a couple sons of the prophets have come, and they need some changes of raiment and some raiment and some silver. Gets it, and he goes back. And Elisha tells him, "Naaman's leprosy will be upon you and your children forever." Why don't we think of Gehazi when we're going through a trial? Why do we always think of Job? There is many a time where we are going through something that we simply brought upon ourselves. So of course we don't like to think of that. How about Moses when he couldn't enter the land of Canaan? Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock 2 times, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and the beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, "Because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them." Maybe sometime when we don't have something that we believe we were supposed to have, when we turn to Job and we look at all the things that God took away from him, maybe we should turn to Moses and wonder, what's God trying to tell me? Many a man wants to jump off a cliff and then blame God for the law of gravity. But he ought to look at himself, blame himself for stupidity, and thank God that he's still alive. Something you need to ask yourself when you're going through a trial. We go back and we look at Job and his 3 friends. Job had 3 friends that came to him. Most everything that Job's three friends said was correct. About 90% of what they said was wrong, not because it was in and of itself wrong, but because they were saying it to the wrong person. Only about 10% of what they said was actually wrong because it was wrong. And I'll get to that a little bit later if I don't forget. I'm going to go through one of the chapters that was one of the things that one of his three friends said, and we find those things that he said quoted elsewhere throughout the Bible. It was truth. Just saying it to the wrong person. And what we need to ask ourselves when we're going through a trial is, if Job's three friends were talking to me, would they be right? They were wrong when they were talking to Job. Would they be right if they were talking to you? My grandpa once told me a story. My grandpa Bjorki, he was in the Boy Scouts. He was sitting around a campfire with a whole bunch of his friends, and this one boy was sitting on a block of wood with a chopping block next to him, and he was putting an M&M on the chopping block, chop it in half, eat both halves, chopping his M&Ms in half and eating both halves. Another guy sitting on the other side thought he'd sneak one. Lost a finger. Wrong timing. Reached out to grab an M&M. Instead of getting an M&M, he lost a finger. Whose fault was that? Nobody would think to blame the guy who was chopping M&Ms in half. Why do you reach your finger underneath the axe? Yet many a Christian wants to blame God for the trial they're going through when their lifestyle is just as foolish. God has rules that he lays out, the way things work. He tells us in the scripture. You do this, I do this. There's consequences for life according to the way we live. Yet we want to live our life the way we want to live it. And when the axe come down and take our finger off, we want to blame the guy holding the axe. Get real. Read the Bible. The consequences God says are going to happen are going to happen. One of the areas that I see this many a time is in relationships. You know, you don't throw an egg at somebody and then blame them for breaking it. Yet I see many a guy and many a girl throw their heart at somebody and then blame them for breaking it. You what? Most relationship trials are fully self-inflicted. Most of the time. We want to end up getting mad at God for the things that he's done. And then sometimes I even hear people talk about trying to forgive God. How can I forgive God? How can I forgive God? To forgive somebody, you imply that they did you wrong. You can't forgive somebody that never wronged you. You can't forgive God. If you're trying to forgive God, you're coming at it from the wrong angle. Don't forgive God. He never wronged you. And that's the same thing with so many times in relationships. This guy is trying to forgive this girl that broke up with him when she never wronged him. And it goes the other way. You can't expect to only get in a relationship. You guys all know this story, so I hope you'll forgive me for talking about it. But a little while after Amanda and I broke up, we were exchanging some emails, and I just asked her for forgiveness for not being very understanding in certain areas, certain things. She was like, oh, certainly. And she wrote back and asked me for forgiveness for some things, and I wrote back and said, sorry, I can't, because you didn't wrong me. Now, that wasn't very tactful, but who would have expected me to be tactful? But I meant it from the depths of my heart. I was like, no, I can't forgive you for that, because that would imply that you wronged me. And you didn't wrong me. So, many a time we're in trials, and we shouldn't look to Job, because we're not in a trial of his nature. Don't expect Job's answer to another man's trial. Don't expect Job's answer to Nebuchadnezzar's trial. Don't expect Job's answer to Saul's trial. Don't expect Job's answer to Gehazi's trial. And don't expect Job's answer to Moses' trial. And don't expect Job's answer to your trial unless it's actually Job's type of trial. There's another kind of trials, and I was just reading this, and this stuck out to me amazingly. Sometimes we're in a trial, and it has nothing to do with us. We aren't in this trial because we brought it upon ourselves, nor was this trial designed specifically for our benefit. Sometimes we just happen in a trial. And I'm going to give you a story of this. Whoever thinks of trials when you think of Caleb? Whoever has thought of trials when you think of Caleb? One person. This just stuck out to me for the first time when I was reading through the book of Joshua. Caleb and Joshua both. Joshua 14:6. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again, as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, Surely the land whereupon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord thy God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, and yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh Hebron for an inheritance. The children of Israel disobeyed, and we're not allowed to go into the land of Canaan. Joshua and Caleb didn't get to go in either, though it had nothing to do with them. Sometimes there are trials that have nothing to do with you. It wasn't caused by you, and it wasn't designed for your benefit, but you're there anyway. Like Joshua and Caleb. For 45 years, the promise that was made to him was delayed because of somebody else's sin. But we don't once see him or Joshua complaining about this. And I'm going to suggest to you that if you're complaining about your situation, this probably isn't your case. It probably was designed for your benefit. But anyway, this is an interesting thing to think about. Even though it wasn't designed for their benefit, we still have a promise that it will work out that way. Romans 8:28. I wasn't going to turn there because I thought I could quote it, but now I can't. Romans 8:28. How does that go? Yes, we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and are the called according to His purpose. Christ also. Christ died that we might live. The whole lifestyle that he went through was designed for our benefit. Many a time you might be in a trial that is designed for somebody else's benefit, not your own. But, excuse me. Then, of course, there's many a times when we're in trials that have been designed specifically for our good. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. If the wounds of a friend are faithful, how much more the God of all the earth? I had another spot here that I was going to turn to and I lost my bookmark. Deuteronomy 32:39 reads, "See now that I, even I, am He, and there is no God with me. I kill and I make alive, I wound and I heal, neither is there any that can deliver out of my hand. For I lift up my hand to heaven and I say I live forever. I whet my glittering sword and make and mine hand may take hold on judgment." Wet here is the word for sharpen. I kill and I make alive. This is the God we serve. Many a time we are in a trial for our own benefit. We don't necessarily know why we're here, but we are. You know, a musician takes the strings on his instrument and he tightens them, and he tightens them, and he tightens them. Adding that tension to make a more harmonious sound. Violin makers prefer wood that's cut from old growth trees, grown wire, on northern slopes, on high mountains. Makes the best instruments. Many a times, that's the way we feel. We feel like a tree growing up high on a northern slope. We don't feel like we have the sun that we need. And the wind's blowing hard. But that's the tree that the musical instrument maker is going to choose. You know, I've seen trees up in high mountains. They were probably 30 years old and only about this tall. At the base, 8 inches around, 4 feet high, the height of the tree. It's because it's that cold and that windy, the summers are that short. It's only how much time it has to grow. Those are the best trees for musical instruments. And if you want a beautiful piece of wood, you go and you find a maple tree that's been carelessly hacked with axes and kids have built tree houses on and messed up with all kinds of that sort of thing, and that has been tapped for syrup. It was almost taken out by a tornado. That tree is going to have some beautiful wood, designs, swirls. I have a question. Would you be willing to go through what Job went through to be made more like Christ? We're told that all things do work together for our good. Do you read Job and say, "Yes, I would do that. Be made more like Christ"? If not, you've probably chosen the wrong religion, because God has, He may just do that. So get ready. It may just happen. Remember, airplanes take off against the wind, not with it. You press the grapes to get the juice out. You boil the maple sap to make the syrup. The mountaintops are fun and beautiful, but it's in the valleys where the fruit grows. These ideas shouldn't be foreign to us, because in Christianity, we die that we might live. We surrender that we might win. We weep that we might laugh.
That's the way that Christianity is. This should be normal for us. We should understand these things. Genesis 18:20. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which has come unto me. And if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and spare not the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And Abraham answered and said, behold now, I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, if I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. And he spake unto him yet again and said, peradventure there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for the 40's sake. And he said unto him, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure there shall be 30 found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, behold now, I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not do it for the 20. I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. The Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. Abraham didn't know what God was doing. He's thinking of Lot. He's thinking, my friend Lot in Sodom. What's going to happen to Lot? Why is God doing this? My nephew has to go through this. Why? What's happening? He didn't know what God was doing. And you may not know what God is doing, but you can know what Abraham knew. Shall not the God, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? You may not know why you lost a child. You may not know why you have a disabled child. You may not know why your loved ones have passed on when you thought they should have had many years to live. You may not know why every dream you ever dreamed has been smashed and why everything you've ever tried to do has come to an end, been crumbled at your feet. You may not know why you've been sick for years. But if you will listen, you will hear above the noise of strife and trials. You will hear the echo of the ages sounding o'er the hills once again. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?